you can rely on Atlas Butler for all of your plumbing and drain service needs. Our expert plumbers and drain specialists can take care of anything, from a broken water heater to a clogged drain. One call truly does it all.
Atlas Butler is built to keep you comfortable, and our plumbing services are no exception. Call today, get it fixed today. That's our pledge to you.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
This is a podcast by The Straits Times.
Welcome to Green Pulse, a podcast series by The Straits Times, where we analyze the beats of the changing environment, from biodiversity conservation to climate change. I'm your host, Audrey Tan, and I cover science and environment for The Straits Times. My co-host is David Fogarty.
Hi, I'm David, and I'm the climate change editor at The Straits Times.
It is the 22nd of June. Singapore recently announced plans to set up a new marketplace for the Climate Impact Exchange, which will facilitate the sale of high-quality carbon credits. People who buy carbon credits essentially pay others to reduce emissions on their behalf. But how do such schemes fit into what is needed to tackle climate change, which basically entails massive cuts in emissions across all sectors? Today, we discuss this with Professor Koh Lian Pin, who helms the Centre for Nature-Based Climate Solutions at the National University of Singapore. Thanks for joining us today, Lian Pin.
Thanks, Audrey. I'm happy to be here.
So I was wondering whether maybe you could start us off by telling us about how carbon credits work. We know emitters can pay to buy them, but what are the sources of these credits?
Carbon credits can come from a variety of sources. The one that I am personally most interested in and the center here at the NUS is interested in are what we call nature-based carbon credits. These are credits generated from nature-based projects or forest carbon projects, including, for example, reforestation projects in our region or forest protection projects as well. When we protect forest that is under threat of loss, say in Indonesia, that intervention can lead to some amount of avoided carbon emissions because the forest would no longer be converted to another land use, such as oil palm plantations or forest plantations. And therefore, the avoided carbon emissions can be measured, can be quantified, and converted into carbon credits. And these carbon credits can be traded in voluntary carbon markets today for the carbon emitters, which are usually the businesses, to buy them and to help offset the emissions coming from their operations.
For the new carbon marketplace announced recently, there is a strong emphasis on high-quality carbon credits, or offsets, as they're also known as. So what exactly does high-quality mean?
That's a very good question. It's actually not an easy question to answer. We don't really have a good understanding of the quality of carbon credits or offsets in the market today. It's a very heterogeneous and also very opaque marketplace when it comes to forest carbon credits. There are carbon projects that do deliver on what they promise in terms of avoiding certain amount of carbon emissions or sequestering a certain amount of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere through reforestation. But there are also carbon projects that fail to deliver on those promises, or projects that have overestimated the amount of added value that they are contributing to climate mitigation. So at the moment, we know there are a few ways to try to figure out which are the good projects from which are the bad projects or dodgy projects. And one of the things we look at is what we call additionality, right? Whether or not the project actually delivers an added value. It's quite an abstract concept, but you can think of it in terms of maybe comparing two scenarios. The first scenario would be a business as usual scenario, where without this intervention, without this carbon project, the forest would undergo conversion or deforestation and be converted into an oil palm plantation. And if we implement a new carbon project on this forest, we would prevent that from happening. And by preventing the conversion of this forest, we are avoiding the loss of a certain amount of carbon credits. And that amount of carbon credits can be quantified into the as the additional value or the additionality of the carbon project. So one dimension or one aspect of understanding what a high quality carbon credit is to be sure that the projects do deliver on this added value and they do have additionality.
But there are, of course, existing standards and standards that have been around for a long time and keep evolving. So it's not as if these sort of projects aren't regulated in a way. I guess that goes into part of the high quality sort of element, if that's correct.
Yeah, that's correct. So high quality, in addition to addressing some of these risks of carbon projects, including the additionality aspects of it that I mentioned earlier, high quality also includes trying to capture the other positive externalities or the other co-benefits of the carbon project, including whether or not the carbon project is also helping in biodiversity conservation, whether it's also contributing to the well-being and the livelihoods of the local communities, and whether it may also be contributing to safeguarding the local communities against the impacts of climate change, especially in the coastal areas where they may be threatened by flooding, sea level rise, and so on. And some of these carbon projects, especially the ones involving mangroves and other coastal ecosystems, could potentially deliver those kinds of co-benefits that contribute towards climate change adaptation in addition to climate change mitigation.
Why are standards important when it comes to talking about carbon credits and trying to avoid emissions in the first place?
Standards are very important because without standards, we don't know, or from the buyer's perspective, the buyers wouldn't know how to discern the good projects from the bad projects, the low-quality carbon credits from the high-quality carbon credits. So by having an internationally recognized carbon standard, the carbon project investors or implementers would then have to make sure that as they establish the carbon project and operationalize it, they have to adhere to certain requirements or criteria as laid out by the internationally recognized carbon standards. There are several carbon standards in the world today, most of them relevant to the voluntary carbon market, which is where the bulk of the carbon trading happens. And those standards are important, but there are voices from the market and the buyers and even the project developers themselves calling for higher standards, even more stringent and more credible standards to help raise the bar to make sure that what we have in the carbon market in the future will be progressively more credible carbon products, carbon credits. So that as a marketplace, this carbon credits or carbon offsets can become a credible, a trusted commodity that would attract more buyers to help the buyers offset their emissions.
Now, if you like what you're hearing so far, do subscribe to our series Green Pulse on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts. Like us and give us a rating.
So carbon credits aren't new, although we have seen that they have become increasingly talked about nowadays. I was wondering whether you could give us any examples of how such carbon credit schemes in the past have worked. I think recently, the Nature Conservancy in the US came under fire for selling carbon credits from a forest that was not meant to be chopped down in the first place.
Yeah, that's right. I think you touched on an important point, and that also sort of reiterates or relates to the problem of additionality that I mentioned earlier. It is actually quite challenging to prove additionality or to be able to demonstrate convincingly that a project will deliver a certain amount of benefits, because it boils down to establishing a baseline. And I remember earlier I mentioned the two scenarios. I mentioned a business as usual scenario. In other words, a scenario that predicts or projects what would happen to the forest if we don't do anything about it. In some cases, it's quite easy to come up with a business as usual scenario. For some of the forest patches in Southeast Asia, we know that if we don't do anything about it and the land is currently allocated for an oil palm concession, then we can be pretty confident that it will be converted to an oil palm plantation in the next 3-5 years. But in other parts of the world and in other contexts, it may be quite difficult to predict what will happen to the forest. And sometimes there are project implementers or investors that can make a case or an argument for a very pessimistic scenario of what would happen to the forest if we don't implement a carbon project. And if they overestimate the threat of loss or the risk of deforestation for that forest, then they would also be overestimating the additionality of the project. In other words, overestimating the value of that investment to protect that forest. And if they do that, then they would be overselling the carbon project in essence.
So I guess one of the key things about offsetting is that it's supposed to be part of a multitude of steps. But of course, there are concerns that carbon credits for some could simply be used as a way to keep polluting as long as they keep buying offsets. So it's kind of like a license to keep polluting. So what do you think about that? And do you think that carbon offset schemes can still help cut emissions and reduce the impacts of climate change?
Yes. That's a good question. Thanks for asking. So I think first and foremost, the most important climate mitigation action that the public and private sectors should invest in is decarbonization, is to transition away from the use of fossil fuels to renewables, as well as to increase our energy efficiency and reduce our waste. But on top of that, I think nature-based carbon projects or solutions or climate solutions are important for a very important reason, which is that a big part of our current carbon emissions is actually coming from land use change and then forestry, the conversion or the deforestation of our natural ecosystems and converting them to other land uses. And that itself contributes to carbon emissions. So while we work hard and invest in decarbonization to turn off that type of emissions, we also need to turn off this other type of emissions coming from land use change and forestry. And therefore, I think nature-based climate solutions must be part of the solution. And indeed, it is recognized by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change as an important component of the few pathways that they have proposed for the world to achieve the Paris Climate Agreement. But you did bring up a very important point that some companies might try to, or some businesses might try to game the system by overemphasizing or overinvesting in buying offsets from the voluntary carbon market, for example, and using that as a way to appear to be achieving or trending or moving towards net zero emissions, using nature-based offsets to offset their carbon emissions, while not really doing enough to decarbonize, to reduce their use of fossil fuels, for example. That is a big concern, and some have called it greenwashing. I think it's not something that should detract us from investing in nature-based solutions, but rather it's something that we have to deal with. We have to come up with regulatory measures and indeed market-based measures to try to reduce that from happening, or the chances of that from happening. And one thing that could potentially help to address that is the new Climate Impact Act, or the carbon exchange that will be set up in Singapore towards the end of the year. Because if we have this carbon exchange, and this carbon exchange is a credible one, that both suppliers of credits and buyers of credits want to be involved in, then this carbon exchange could have an influence to make sure that they hold the buyers of these carbon credits to account, right? To make sure that while they buy the credits from this exchange, they must also demonstrate that they are doing sufficient or in implementing sufficient measures to draw down their own emissions in their businesses. So I think there are ways to address that problem of greenwashing, but the more important point is we shouldn't throw away the baby with the bathwater when it comes to nature-based climate solutions just because of the threat or this risk of greenwashing.
Well, that's a wrap for Green Pulse, and we hope you enjoyed our discussion. For more on climate change and the environment, do check out our stories in the Straits Times. And don't forget to subscribe to our Green Pulse podcast series on your favourite audio apps, Apple Podcasts, Spotify or Google Podcasts.
That was an SPH podcast by The Straits Times. Find us on Spotify, Apple or Google Podcasts, or streaming on Google Home. Do feedback to us at podcast@sbh.com.sg.
You can also check out more podcasts on various topics at The Straits Times, The Business Times and Money FM 89.3.